All right, tonight, Matthew 18, we'll let Roger be our designated reader. And Matthew 18, and we'll start with verse 21. Jesus is talking to the disciples before this passage, and they're having a discussion on forgiveness. And Jesus has told the disciples that if you have something against your brother, that you should go to him in private, talk with him, have prayer. And then we open up with verse 21 with Peter, who, as always, likes to ask questions and speak up. And so this is where we take off. Again, he's talking about forgiveness, and Peter in verse 21 says,
"Then Peter came and said to him, 'Lord, how often shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Up to seven times?'"
All right, let's stop there. What do you think is Peter's point here?
How long do we have to take this abuse?
Okay, that's one way of looking at it. What do you think Peter is here? He's talking about forgiveness, that you should forgive your brothers.
And really being generous. Strung out seven, boy, that's, I mean, if you're willing to do it, that I really,
Okay, that's absolutely correct. Why was he being generous at seven times? Does anybody know what the Jewish law was to forgive somebody?
Okay. What forgiveness?
Well, no, they...
Did they have forgiveness?
They had some for forgiveness. It was generally accepted from the book of Amos that if you forgave three times, that you had gone the extra mile. So if somebody did something to you once and you forgave them, if they did it twice, you forgive them. Boy, if you gave them three, that's really was something. And so Peter, here trying to be a little magnanimous, says, "Well, Lord, I guess if I forgive them seven times..." And his response that he expected from Jesus was, "Well, Peter, that's fantastic. Yes, if you forgive somebody seven times, I'd be so proud of you." What was Jesus' answer?
Jesus said to him, "I do not say to you up to seven times, but up to 70 times seven. For this reason, the kingdom of heaven..."
All right, let's stop there. What's Jesus saying?
You're going to lose count. Just forget the count. Keep on doing it.
Yeah. There is no line of demarcation on forgiveness. Nobody can keep up with 490. So what? Pardon?
I see that's the message for us.
That was my next question. What do we get out of that?
Women can keep up with 490 times a year.
Pardon?
A wife can keep up with 490 times a spouse.
That's why Jesus. That's why in the New Test. Forget it. That's why in the New Testament he always talked about men. Just a joke if anybody's listening to this. So, 490. What does that say about our relationship with God?
He doesn't expect us to forgive more than he's willing to forgive us.
Okay. Is that what you were thinking?
Yeah, well, unconditional forgiveness.
Okay. For how long?
As long as we're alive, hopefully.
Okay. I thought there was this thing called probation. Now, if you need reminding, go back and listen to some of our great evangelists. Close the probation. You know, the alarm clock goes off and one day you just don't hear it. And what's this saying?
I should bring it back to memory. I almost forgot about that. I was, when, you know, the seven times when Peter says that, I've been noticing lately that seven appears often as a symbol of completeness, of absolute finished. The man who would have leprosy dipped in the water seven times, and the furnace was heated seven times hotter.
And I'm sure that when Peter said seven, that he was kind of being magnificent, magnanimous, whatever those big words are. But he also was thinking of exactly the same thing as kind of completion. What does it say when Jesus says, well, 490 times?
Well, it's...
There's no...
The Lord's Prayer says, forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors.
Okay.
In other words, we're really bringing down on ourselves a curse almost, because if we're not forgiving our debtors,
We'll come back and answer this at the end of this, because he's going to illustrate it. Now, what's going to happen from here is that he's going to give a little story. And what I want us to recognize before we get into the story is, as we go through the New Testament with the Gospel, I've said, you know, many, many times, that the only basis of judgment is how have you treated your fellow man. And we're going to see one of the ones right here. The basis of judgment from God is, how have you treated your fellow man? So, start the story.
For this reason, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a certain king who wished to settle accounts with his slaves. And when he had begun to settle them, there was brought to him one who owed him 10,000 talents.
Okay, let's stop there. So the king comes in and he has all these slaves. Now, slaves were not meant particularly those in, quote, slavery, but the people that worked for him. So some of them he had loaned land to, or he had given them a land to work. He owed them wages. He had loaned them money. And so one day he decides it's settle up day. So he announces to all the people, it's time to settle up. And so now here comes one man that we're going to hear the story about. So it's time to settle up the accounts.
But since he did not have the means to repay, his Lord commanded him to be sold along with his wife, children, and all that he had, and repayment to be made.
Okay. This was Jewish law. When it came time, if a person owed money, the person had the right to take over that person's whole family, all of these things, until he was settled. How much did it say he owed him?
10,000.
10,000. Now let's put this into perspective. Best I can find was the man owed the king 15 years worth of wages. 15 years worth of wages. That's a lot.
How much is a talent?
Pardon me?
How much is a talent?
I have no idea. It's 15 years worth of wages that he owed. Okay?
This Ken West from Moody says he owed him about $12 million.
Yeah. Well, in that case,
a high official.
50 years.
unless
you're Charles, then it might be 5 years. I'm not sure, but yeah. It's about 15 years worth of wages. So he can't pay it. And so the king has all the right to say, look, wife, children, family, all of this, going to stick you over here, and you're getting nothing. You're going to work it off till you repay me. Now, what does the servant do?
The slave, therefore, falling down, prostrated himself before him, saying, "Have patience with me, and I will repay you everything." And the lord of the slave felt compassion and released him and forgave him the debt.
Okay. Now, he falls down, pleads for everything, and says what? Do you think he had the means to repay?
No.
Absolutely not. No way. But in his heart, he's saying, be with me, I'll repay you. And the king is moved with what?
Compassion.
And he works it out. And he does what with the debt?
Releases it for David.
Yeah, releases the debt. And now we have one happy person, right? Forgiven of a debt that he could never repay, and he has the compassion of the king. And so he walks out a new start on life, everything in front, and the happiest person around. Continue the story.
But that slave went out and found one of his fellow slaves who owed him 100 denarii.
Okay, now let's put this into perspective. I know there's all kinds of figures. I've looked at about 15 of them today. And if it's 15 years of work, the guy owes this servant one day. You get the picture? One day's work is what he owes him.
Yeah, my text from Woody says $20.
Okay. High roller. One day, okay? What? Now, he's been forgiven. He's seen the compassion of the king. He's happy. Goes out. Finds a guy that owes him one day. And does what?
And he seized him and began to choke him, saying, "Pay back what you owe." So the fellow slave fell down and began to entreat him, saying, "Have patience with me, and I will repay you." He was unwilling, however, but went and threw him in prison until he should pay back what was owed.
So when okay, let's stop there. What do you think so far?
He's talking about me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Here he'd been forgiven, owing everything he could never, never, never even think about repaying. And he goes out and finds a person that owes him a penance. Chokes him. Throws him in prison. Until he can get repaid. What happens?
So when his fellow slaves saw what had happened, they were deeply grieved and came and reported to their lord all that had happened. Then summoning him...
Okay, let's stop there for a second. Is this human nature?
Tell him.
Pardon?
Go tell him.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Did they have reason to do it?
Okay.
Do you think some of them had repaid the king?
Okay. Or had their debts forgiven.
One or the other.
Yes.
And so then they see one of them go out and do this to this poor man. And so, whether it was through jealousy, righteous indignation, or just unhappy, they go tell the king. How does the king react?
Then summoning him, his lord said to him, "You wicked slave, I forgave you all that..."
Okay, move back up to where they come to the king.
Oh, so when his fellow slaves saw what had happened, they were deeply grieved and came and reported to the lord all that had happened. Then summoning him, his Lord said to him, "You wicked slave, I forgave you all that debt because you entreated me. Should you not have also have mercy on your fellow slave, even as I have had mercy on you?" And his Lord moved with anger.
Stop right there. What verse is he moved with anger?
34.
What does your version say? 34. What word does it use for, "And the king," or "the Lord was" what?
Moved with anger.
Got angry.
And having been aroused to the point of justifiable anger.
Well, he's putting a nice little twist on that one.
Justifiable.
Yeah, I would think that was almost a clear word if I didn't know it better. Anybody else? Let me tell you, this word anger is the worst, highest form of anger the Greek allows. This man, this king, is El Mado. And what does he do?
His Lord, moved with anger, handed him over to the torturers until he should repay.
By the way, the word torturers, what do y'all have?
Jailers.
Jailers? Anybody else?
Torturers.
What do you think of when you... What version you have?
I have the Rye.
Okay. It's a good version. What do you think of that word torturers? Isn't it nicer to put them in jail or put them in a little holding cell? By the way, the word is tortures in Greek.
Well, you got to figure in the Dark Ages, torture was pretty bad. So back then, it had to be even worse.
Yeah. Worst possible punishment the king can give. Read on.
Until he should repay all that was owed him.
Now, is this guy ever going to be able to repay?
No.
Well, no, he's put him in a place he couldn't repay. He didn't put him in a work lend lease program. Okay, keep going.
So shall my heavenly Father also do to you if each of you does not forgive his brother from your heart.
Wow, I thought we were trying to get a good picture of God out of this. So what have we learned? You don't do good, man, he's going to be mad and he's going to torture you. Now we're right back to the Old Testament view. So how do we reconcile all this? First of all, let's go step by step. What's the picture of God when the man comes and God says to him, "We've got to settle up, and you owe me 15 years of work. So I guess I'm going to have to do what's expected of me and put you on my work lend program where you get out and work the rest of your life to repay me if you can." And how does the man react?
Seeks mercy.
And here comes that word that we see quite often in the Gospels with Jesus, compassion. We'll see many times in the Gospel Jesus was moved with compassion. And the king has compassion and all is well. Servant with a new lease on life finds some poor rascal that owes him nothing, throws him in. Somebody tattletales, and the king gets angry. Well, I don't like God angry. So what do we do with this? Does God have the right to be angry?
Yes.
Oh.
I don't think there's
better believe it.
You can't have a picture of God as angry when you see injustices of man to man. I mean, you know, it stirs me, and I can imagine the creator of this to look at it and say, this isn't what I intended.
I have the picture here of a high ranking official. Had a high position, and he's picking on the poor lowly man. And that, yes, would bring anger from, mm-hmm. I think, from anyone who would see it.
Yeah, I mean, if he's loaning one day's worth to somebody and he owes 15 years, he must be making some money. He must have some responsibility. Very, very good. And so he comes. But what makes God angry?
The lack of compassion the man has.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
This is the investigative judgment. God's investigating that man's heart. Sees he's got no compassion.
Doesn't need to sit there and look at a record book. Doesn't need to write it down. Doesn't need to put it in his memory bank. Doesn't have to wait 2,000 years. The judgment is right before him. The thing that makes God angry is when he sees someone who he has blessed, who he has given a chance in life, turn right around and hurt his fellow brethren. So that anger isn't the anger that we would, where I would really like to beat him up. This anger is a hurt anger, a sickening down in the soul that says, how can you do this to this person? Now, my opening question was, as we were discussing, when we talk about how many times had he just said the person should be forgiven?
70 times.
And how many times do we think this king had forgiven this guy? Once? Where's the other 489 times?
The man didn't ask for forgiveness.
Okay.
The second time.
Pardon?
The second time.
Okay. Where are the other 489?
They should be available.
Oh, they're available.
Invalidated.
He superseded his available forgiveness.
So you think that instead of allowing the 490 times to the man's account, God says 1's equal 490? Case closed?
Well, it's not a matter of count. Oh. The numbers.
Well, there goes my theory.
Well, 15 years, one day, you know, 2 years covers 490.
Yeah.
Well, the bottom line is what's in his heart on the forgiveness thing.
Remember the principle. When truth is revealed to a person, what does it do to them? It moves them in one direction or the other. You cannot stand still. The man had begged and pleaded, fell down, and the king showed compassion. Now, what would that have done to most people?
You'd then become compassionate.
They'd be so thankful.
Absolutely. Guy comes up and says, sir, I owe you a day's wage. Man, let me tell you.
Yeah.
You owe me a day. Let me tell you the story. And when that man forgave me of the 15 years, my fellow being, you are forgiven of your one day.
The man really got more than he asked for, because he said he didn't ask for it to be forgiven. He said, be patient. I'll figure out a way to get it to you.
See.
And it was totally removed.
Yes.
Take it off. So then.
Yes. So that moves you one way or the other. Listen, you cannot look at God. You cannot have God show grace in your life and it not affect you one way or the other. And when this happened to this man, we have all the right now to question, number one, was he sincere?
His desire to be forgiven.
Yes. He was trying to escape his consequences.
That's right. That's right.
The heart was never touched.
He was sorry he was about to settle up.
Sorry I owe you 15 years? I'm certainly sorry I've got to go to debtor's prison. And oh my, just have the forgiveness to give me another chance to let me go, let me do. Please, please, please. And he was moved with compassion. This was his son. God to us. This was his son, and he let him go. And he went right out and said, wow, I got away with that one. Now, where are the guys that owe me money? We can never outrun the calling of God, and we can never be in a state to be forgiven that we run out of 490 times. Never, never, never. It's us that shuts the door. And this man was in the presence of graciousness, kindness, compassion, and it moved him not one iota, and what more could the king have done for him? Forgive him again? What would he have learned? Well, let's go for number three. Nothing could have moved him. That's why he was angry. He was angry because he could not appeal to the person himself, and then that person took everything granted and immediately took it out on his brother. And that does move God.
Ernie?
Yes?
It seemed like that guy is like a con artist. He conned the king, and it's con artists are just basically dishonest at heart. And so he just turned around and took it out on the other guy. It seemed like he was just a con artist.
Yeah. True. There was nothing to him. But God still showed compassion.
And you think God knows the heart.
That's right.
So he, you know, but he still did what he
That's
did.
That's right. See. But God is no fool, and for him to come back and do it again then becomes absolutely to the man's detriment. And so he goes out, and then Jesus says, this is exactly, read the last sentence.
So shall my heavenly Father also do to you, if each of you does not forgive his brother from your heart.
Okay. See? And then he says, this is exactly the basis of judgment. King never asked any theological questions, did he? He never said, by the way, how's that tithe paying going? No. He knew the man's heart when he took the very thing he sought and went and did his brother that way. That's why Jesus says when he comes and he separates the wheat and the tares, what was the basis of that? I was hungry, thirsty, naked. He says to the wicked, you did nothing for me. And the righteous didn't even know that they had done it. He said, well, when did we ever feed you? They did it because they had glimpses of who God was in their life, and it became automatic for them to pass that on to somebody else. And the wicked were just like this guy. Well, if we had known all the consequences that we are about to face, then we certainly would have given this guy a coat. Or we certainly would, if it was you and we recognized you, we certainly would give you water. So that's back to what Charles is saying, just a con man. If there's something in it for us, we would have done it. But boy, when there's nothing in it for us, we ain't doing anything. Think the disciples understood this? Doubt it.
Well, I think it was a lesson to them.
Yep.
I don't know that they fully grasped it. It surely must have some impact on them.
Certainly took care of Peter's, look at me, if I forgive seven times. Yeah, Jesus said, man, that would be a... That's kind of nice, but actually 490 would really be, you know, and you can imagine Peter saying, oh, missed out on that one. All right, as always, great question. What in the world does this do for us today? What lesson do we get from this few verses?
Misshapen elements of my character and myself. It really is very self-revealing. And I want to ask a question that you're also asking is, I wonder what the Pharisees thought of this story. Because I think they should see themselves in this story.
They thought it was crazy.
Get back to the Lord's Prayer. We really are bringing the condemnation down on ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we're saying, well, forgive me as I forgive others. Mm-hmm. If I'm not forgiving others, don't bother to forgive me then. I mean, it's really what we're saying.
And this is what Jesus came to show in His ministry. Lepers, unclean, I'll touch them and heal them. Samaritan, dogs, I'll take the gospel. Blind people are blind because they sinned, I'll heal them. Demoniacs, take care of them. Woman in adultery, where are your accusers? This is why He came. And then this is why He puts people in our path, because the way we treat them reveals to us what our flaws are. Or what's good? Because the only goodness that we have comes through God. And so that's why throughout the entire New Testament, the basis of judgment is not what you believe, not what laws you keep, not what laws you break, not what great theology you have, is what have you done for your fellow man? Yes.
We extend this a little bit and talk about the situation where someone has done something terrible to you or to a family member.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not sorry for it. They don't ask forgiveness. We can't carry the guilt around forever. I mean, we can't carry the ugliness in our heart toward them. So how do you address that situation in forgiveness?
Okay. What's the answer?
I don't think forgiveness has anything to do with the other person wanting it or not wanting it. I think it comes from within us. I mean, you know, we can forgive them with the person if they don't pay me, you know. It's what's inside of us that's whether we forgive or not forgive. It has nothing to do with whether the other person wants to be forgiven or doesn't want to be forgiven.
And I don't think it really matters how grievous the act that someone did to us. The reality is, when we think of how we have messed up as a race, as a person ourselves, and look what God offers us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, it's such a, you know, I know the human element of, I just want to get that, make that person suffer. I mean, I don't care if it's a murder of a child or, you know, whatever. The reality is, it doesn't even compare to what God has done mm-hmm. in relationship to me.
Mm-hmm.
And
is it
Jesus on the cross? I mean, here he'd been beaten, he'd been done everything they could have done. They were taking their life. Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing.
Okay.
Is it okay to forgive them after you retaliate?
It's more fun. Yeah. It's more fun. By the way, when you look at that, that was more compassionate than any law they had when God gave that eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. That was more compassionate than the law they had. So that's sometimes very, very much misunderstood. Because what they would do is he would talk about revenge one-on-one. Their revenge was go out and wipe out entire nations. So that was really more of a judgment that was more realistic. What do we do with people that do things to us? It's a good question. It's legitimate.
I think two things I'm thinking of, and one is we say that when we have been mistreated, we need to allow that to make us better rather than bitter.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to allow the natural consequences to fall on the misbehaving part.
Mm-hmm.
If there are, and there usually are natural consequences.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that's out of our realm.
Yeah. You see, the struggle isn't us versus them. The struggle is us and God. So you cannot be accountable for what other people do.
Oh, I have a friend who was abused as a child, and we've talked a lot. And dealing with that anger and everything is really hard. And I've told her, and I don't know if I've told her correctly, I said, you can't change the other person, you can't change the circumstances, but by giving it over to God and letting God deal with it, you negate your responsibility in it with them. Just give it to God, and then you go forward. And she doesn't want people tell her that she has to go to her father and tell her father that I forgive you, and, you know, and discuss it with him. And I've told her that
I
didn't feel that was necessary.
I'm not a counselor.
I told her, you give it to God and you go forward. It's not your responsibility.
I don't think it...
And in a way, that is a forgiveness.
Yeah, I don't think it's...
I'm telling you, right.
No, I don't think it's anybody's responsibility to go and say, I forgive you.
I mean, he doesn't ask her. He doesn't.
No.
He doesn't even admit that he ever did anything wrong.
The great lesson in life is the story of the prodigal son. It always comes back to that parable. The father said, after the son begged and pleaded and got mad and threatened and screamed and threw a temper tantrum and all of that, the father said, "Go." So there comes a point where you just let go. God said in Hosea, how can I let you go? How can I give you up? I brought you up as a little child. I held you in my arms. I fed you. I helped you walk. You don't like, paraphrasing, you don't like me anymore. There's nothing I can do. So I have to let you go. Now he said it tearfully, sad, but that's biblical. Only in your particular case, a friend's particular case, only the healing relationship between Jesus and that person can cure that problem. If a person does not want forgiveness, it's not our place to go and get involved. That's between them and God. That's my opinion, but I think it's biblical.
So as far as her forgiveness, level of forgiveness toward her father? I mean,
I don't know where it says that she needs to forgive him.
Yeah.
And moving forward, is that
you gotta
adequate?
You've got to have someone asking
forgiveness
before you can give it. So, I mean, you've got to be aware that...
I think as God looks at us and we stay in rebellion for those that do at the end of time, out of mercy, He ends their life. It has nothing to do with God forgiving them. He forgave them before they was even born. But when you're out of harmony, there's nothing you can do. So we have this forgiveness is I've got to go, today I hate your guts, tomorrow I forgive you. Well, that's baloney.
And really, the other person is continuing to control you if you're holding that in yourself against another person. I mean, they're in control. You're giving them their control. And if you...
If I walk down Bowen Street and a bully beats me up, and I walk down tomorrow and a bully beats me up, and I walk down the third day to tell the bully I forgive him, and before I can tell him I forgave him, he beats me up again. Which one of us is the fool? And I think that's exactly what God's done. The relationship is between a person and God. Now, when you sit there and you say, I hope he dies in an automobile accident tomorrow, that's the humanity thinking there. But I can read you passages where David said, you know, I wish you would kill all of these people. I am really unhappy that that nation has done me wrong, and why don't you wipe them out? That was one of his prayers. So, nowhere are we supposed to just take it. Why do you think when Jesus walked into the temple, He cleansed the temple? And the word angry shows there too, by the way. And of course, we like to pass it off as this nice guy who wrote that version as righteous. He was angry. He was angry because he saw man trespassing and doing unspeakable things to man, and he got mad. So who are we to think that we're supposed to walk around and just say, I'm compelled to forgive somebody who's abused me all my life when the person doesn't even want to admit it? That's
There's been so many people in the church that have told her unless she does that she's not going to be forgiven her own sins.
Well,
she just struggles then with...
With
what others have said.
When you have a picture of God that says, I'm keeping a record and I'm writing it all down and it's tit for tat, then that's what you come up with.
And sometimes we want to... If you still think, I got to go forgive them, then you're still almost taking responsibility for it.
Mm-hmm.
Like somehow and I've got to get you to accept my forgiveness. Like somehow,
that's right.
That's just a victimization.
That's
all over.
That's back to that power struggle.
It is.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah. Jesus said on the cross, Father, forgive them. That was His compassion for the people that were crucifying Him. But He was not interested in the forgiveness of what they were doing there. He was interested in that rebellion that was going to lead them to eternal destruction.
And they don't know what they're doing. They
don't know what. And by the way, were they forgiven? No.
The forgiveness was available. But they
forgiveness was available.
They didn't take
it. It's our attitude, our relationship with God, that enables us to look at somebody who abuses and just says, I wish the best for them, I'm moving on. I believe that's scriptural.
Well, there was the case of the centurion who who said, surely this was the Son of God.
Yeah. And I think he'll be saved.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You said that no, they weren't forgivable. They were...
Yeah, I mean, there was individuals, but we're talking about the entire Jewish nation sealed their own doom there.
And in essence, we are saved or lost individually.
Yeah, absolutely. And see, what remember the principle. Can't say it too many times. I'll say it one more time, then we're going to have prayer. When you stood at the cross at Calvary and you saw Jesus lifted up, and you saw who he was, how could that not move you one direction or the other? To the centurion who had seen hundreds die, he said, there's something different about that man.
The thief beside him.
The thief, one of them, both thieves saw him. One said, remember me. He says, as soon as I mail you the 20th century Bible course, I think you'll be okay. And the other thief saw the same thing. And how did it move him?
Get us down. What do you want?
Get us down. And everybody in that crowd, and it wasn't moved. That's what truth does. Father in heaven, help us as we look to you, look to our fellow man. Doesn't mean we're to be foolish. This parable, the man was king was compassionate, and at the end he saw no hope and moved otherwise. Help us, Father, to understand your love and to look at our brothers and sisters with the same way that you look to us. This is our prayer. In Jesus' name, amen.